Ready to go?
Yeah, as good as I'm going to get.
Fair enough. What's up? This is Movies On Up. Get ready to rock. Always ready to rock is my co-host, Mr. Jay Bacella.
Cocked, locked, and ready to rock.
That's an alternate tagline from the alternate host, Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. Either of the taglines, get ready to rock or cocked, locked, and ready to rock. If you can figure out what movie those two taglines come from, perhaps two prize packages could be cocked, locked, and ready to rock right to your front porch. Send your guests to us in one of the three following ways. You can email us. moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guests on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or get at us on the Twitter @moviesonup if you are correct. And if we choose you, we will be ready to rock and send out a prize package out your way. Everyone that enters, regardless of whether you win a weekly prize package or not, is going to stay in our giant year-end drawing that's going to get you a smorgasbord of VHS tapes from Dave's garage, including but not limited to Wolf.
Yeah, Wolf is the main reason I'm doing it. I legit forgot all about that. I'm glad you remembered.
I remembered because I just edited the episode last night where you mentioned it, so it was fresh in my memory. Hopefully it'll be fresh in yours when you go to enter the contest for this week. Something that may be fresh in your memory is a movie that came out just last year. And it is a Disney animation film. Disney is coming out with another animated film this week in Coco. We thought we might go ahead and give our thoughts on last year's Academy Award nominated Moana. As it turns out, Dave and I both saw it probably at the beginning of this year. Spoiler alert, we both kind of liked it and probably would have talked in greater detail about it last year, but just from a timing thing, we didn't see it, and this was kind of the next best time to talk about it.
I like this movie, and with Coco coming out, I wanted to talk animated movie, and I knew we both liked this, and I feel like we gave Zootopia a lot of run last year.
You gave Zootopia
a lot
of run.
I gave Zootopia a lot of run last year, and figure let's hops on the Moana bandwagon for a moment.
I see what you did there. We were not the only ones that gave both Zootopia and Moana. They got a lot of run. From a box office standpoint, Ron Clements and John Musker, along with Alua Carvalho, Dwayne Johnson, Jermaine Clement, managed to open number one last year, Thanksgiving weekend last year. So right about this time as we record last year, it opened number one with $56.6 million, and that was $16 million clear of the second place movie, which was Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them in its second week. Another Disney movie, Doctor Strange, along with Allied and Arrival, round out your top five for that week. Moana went on to gross $248.7 million at the box office, making it the 11th highest grossing film of 2016 and number 112 on the all-time domestic charts. One spot and about $600,000 above this 1981 Steven Spielberg Globetrotter.
I don't know. When was E.T.?
82
or 84?
It was not E.T. In fact, it was Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. I thought Globetrotter would be a good
I was just thinking
hint.
Basketball movie. I was like, what's a Steven Spielberg tricky basketball
E.T.
movie?
E.T. Fair enough. And it is one spot below the lowest grossing of the original Harry Potter films.
Is that one?
No, it is The Prisoner of Azkaban.
Oh, the best one.
Oh, it was that the best
yeah.
one? I have no idea. I still have yet to see any of them.
Yeah, the best one.
But that one was the lowest grossing of all of them. Just a, kind of a couple nuggets right there.
The best one until Deathly Hallows 1 and 2. The best one of the first six books.
Now, help me out here.
Prisoner
again,
of Azkaban is when it turned it. 1 and 2 are like kids movies, epic kids movies. 3 is when it turns into like, oh, these movies are really good. So 3 kind of sets the tone for the rest.
Is 3 Prisoner of Azkaban?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's like
directed by Cuarón, Alfonso Cuarón.
I mean, that sounds interesting right there. You know, you would have me if you told me, hey, we're going to watch Prisoner of Azkaban directed by Alfonso Cuarón. I'd be like, all right, cool. Oh, this is a Harry Potter
Starring
movie?
Gary Oldman?
Exactly. I'd sign up for that all day. When you tell me it's about kids waving sticks at each other, then you start to lose me a little bit. But if those sticks lit up, then you'd have me again.
They do. It depends on the spell.
Fair enough. It's kind of hard not to mention Disney and Pixar because the two companies have had such an intertwined history. But for the most part, they've kind of split off and done their own thing since 2007. And since that split, Moana is the third highest grossing Disney Animation Studios movie behind only Zootopia from earlier in 2016 and somewhat predictably Frozen. Although, Moana did break Frozen's record for largest opening day for a Disney Animations film. And for comparison, again, because you almost have to, this would be the third highest grossing Pixar movie as well since the 2007 split. So I would say by those metrics, success.
And here's what kills me is like since 2007, like I think you could rattle off any of the animated movies that came out. I don't know that I could tell you whether they were Disney, Pixar, or Disney Pixar.
It's like, tough.
I know some of them, but I'm sure there's others. Like
The sequels are Disney Pixar, right? So
yeah.
your Cars, your Toy Stories.
Because they have the same, because like Inside Out, was that just Pixar or was that Disney Pixar? Okay. See, they all have the same feel.
Yes.
Like, I feel like Moana could be a Disney Pixar movie.
Could, but it's not.
It's not. Wreck-It Ralph, that feels like a Disney movie.
It does.
With Pixar influence. It's Disney, though. So, I mean, it's weird. They're what Marvel and DC should be. Where you have Marvel and DC, where you have this really good universe franchise, and then the whole polar opposite end. And then you just have Disney Pixar, who they know what works, and they're both doing that.
It is a lot easier to tell DC from Marvel, because one is good, and the other is not. Inside Out's good, and it could be either. The Suicide Squad does not seem like the Marvel movie.
I couldn't tell you. Going back all the way to 2007, like,
it's tough. I guess that would have been a fun game to play. Disney or Pixar, and I would just rattle off the movie. But we had mentioned 2016 having two Disney animation movies in Zootopia and Moana. That is out of the ordinary for them. It's the first time since 2002 that they had released two animated films in the same year. That year, the first movie they released was Lilo and Stitch, which did about $145 million. And the second was Treasure Planet, which did not.
Remember that one?
Exactly. That one, for reference, did about $38 million.
Those are both traditional animations. So, I mean, this is the first time with this animation. So
Moana, when it was being developed, was going to be more traditional animation. But some of the animators felt that the water specifically and the characters lended themselves more towards computer animated, which is why we got that instead.
I feel like this would have been a disservice to do as traditional animation because the water, the setting all around, it gives it depth, no pun intended, but like it adds that personality to it. You know, like Maui and her, they're two-dimensional. Like, they could have been fine, but I think for the surroundings or even, like, Jermaine Clement's character, like, there's a part where it looks like 2D animation, and it's amazing. But I feel like I agree with those animators that, yeah, this should be... Because when was the last, like, anime? Was that the Beyonce? Well, I don't know if Beyonce was in it. The Princess and the Frog one?
That was 2D. I think that might have been since the split. That might have been one of the first ones to come out post the split, because it's like Ratatouille, I think, was the first.
That was Pixar.
Pixar one, and that seems like it was a long time ago, and really a decade kind of is. But it's kind of amazing when you think back. Like Disney Pixar was Toy Story, but that was like, Toy Story was what, 99?
Huh. Ron Clements and John Musker directed Princess and the Frog as well.
No, there you go. So those guys very much familiar with 2D animation, but I think to their credit, I think it was actually into the production process they made the switch from 2D to 3D or 2D to CGI animation. I think it looks great. You've mentioned already kind of the not only the giant tortoise, but the landscapes and having essentially one of the landscapes be a character with Tafiki, the good goddess, and the main heavy in the movie, both being basically masses, like just land masses. I think that was kind of rad.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm glad this was how it was because it looks really, really good.
Certainly give them a nod for going in the CG direction. Another thing I guess you would give them a nod for, and it almost feels like you shouldn't have to, but we get so many cases nowadays in Hollywood where movies are whitewashed, where white actors are given parts that the character, if it's a biopic, really should have been an African American. Or even when the live action Pan thing came out, people were killing them for having Rooney Mara play Tiger Lily. It's just one example.
Or Scarlett with Ghost in the Shell.
Being a white actress playing what should have, whatever, been an Asian actress. But this movie, with the exception of Alan Tudyk, who voiced the criminally overused rooster. Right, yeah. The rest of the principal cast are of Polynesian descent, including Jango Fett, Tim Morrison, and budding film star Troy Polamalu, who's averaging $348.4 million at the domestic box office in his two movies. So that's not bad.
Not just the cast. Like, you look at the music, they got Hawaiian musician to come in and do a lot of the songs with Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's of Puerto Rican descent. So, like, it wasn't just like, oh, we're not having white people do the voices. We're not just hiring white people to write the songs trying to mimic this. Like, they're from people who care about that culture.
I mean,
and I think it shows.
Puerto Rican culture and Polynesian culture aren't exactly the same. They're not anywhere near each other. Different oceans, but they both do start with P's.
And they're in the water.
They are both in the water. Very correct.
Which,
so,
if
I guess
anybody, you ask anybody what Polynesian, it means begins with P in the water.
That's exactly what it means. I can't argue with that. Speaking of Polynesian actors, I guess if you're going to think of one in Hollywood, I don't think you get through too many names before you get to Dwayne Johnson. I don't think that people think of him as Polynesian or as Samoan, which he is, or anything. I think he's just, at this point,
The Rock.
Right. He has transcended The Rock. He's just one of the biggest stars in Hollywood. It just so happens that he is also of, like I said, Samoan descent to fit nicely culturally in this movie. I give the directors and the writers a lot of credit for really trying to be careful with the mythology of this culture and not sort of bastardize it. Although reading about some of the criticisms of this movie, there were some characteristics of even The Rock's character, Maui. Oh, he really wasn't like that at all. You made him a buffoon. He wasn't a buffoon. Maybe appropriating bits and pieces to make this story. But for me, Maui is kind of the standout of the movie.
Well, and I will say this about Maui is, we always talk about that. DreamWorks' approach was always like, oh, here's a Will Ferrell animated movie. Or like, they rely on the cast.
Right.
And they
tell you all the names of
the
people.
They deal with it like that. Disney Pixar have never really been like that. I feel like this, you could tell Maui was written with The Rock in mind. And I feel like that's the first time you can say that about a Disney character since maybe the Genie in Aladdin. I feel like maybe it's just that they take it and they do it so well. But I feel like it was written when they were writing this. It's like, oh, this is The Rock.
Well, I'm glad you bring up the Genie because we'll come back to him shortly. But if I were to be completely honest with you, knowing that they're going to cast a completely unknown Polynesian girl, I think she was 14 at the time when they cast her for the lead in this, getting Tim Morrison, who was an established voice guy, getting people of that culture. Okay, you need to find yourself a Polynesian or Samoan, somebody with that heritage, with charisma. Who are you going to go to? Yeah. Of course it's going to be The Rock. So I don't know that they wrote that in mind. I just think he's the obvious choice for it because, again, outside of Troy Polamalu, can you name me another Samoan?
Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, exactly. They're kind of one and two, I think, at this point. The thing I love the most about the character was the way it was written. Sure, I think the negative characteristics of his character were maybe cranked up a little bit just to contrast him with Moana and keep her the hero of the movie rather than the demigod saves the day.
That's the point I wanted to make, is he's relegated as the sidekick.
Yes.
And I thought that was done well. He doesn't save the day. The whole thing is his issue. Like, he caused this. So, like, in a way, he's the villain, in a way, and he's too prideful to fix his mistake. So he is relegated to the sidekick, and I like that he's left out of the happy ending pretty much. She goes back home, and she's celebrated, and she does this all with the village. And, yeah, he shows up flying by later, but I feel like in most cases that he would have led her back and, like, he would have, like, led the ship. I feel like he would have done a lot more, but he's basically Sebastian with, you know, better pecs.
Yeah, and this movie was not called Maui because he's not the hero. But I enjoy that about this movie. I mean, if you can imagine, like, a sidekick Disney character that's written as kind of an a-hole, that when you first meet him, he's an a-hole. You think he's made the turn, and then he kind of leaves her when the going gets... Could you imagine the genie doing that?
I was going to say, did I step on that by already mentioning the genie?
No, that's fine. I mean, I wanted you to have it in your head. Think of that character. Now, when you meet the genie, is he trying to just trick Aladdin into freeing him? Absolutely not. Does he leave Aladdin when he's got to fight Jafar at the end of the movie? Spoiler alert, no, he doesn't. So to me, having this character written as sort of a nuanced character, I think is a lot for Disney. We generally in Disney movies have good guys. The Little Mermaid, Ariel, good guy. Prince Eric, decent fella, if not tool bag. Ursula, she's bad. We know the bad people, but like you said, sort of, Maui is the... He starts all the trouble. It wasn't...
Unknowingly.
Yeah. He was trying to do kind of a good thing for selfish reasons, to get more adulation from people. He didn't fully take into account the consequences of his actions, but even after the bad stuff started to happen, he wasn't too worried about it.
He goes on a little bit of an arc. He does get his moment of redemption, but I don't think it's...
It's not really an arc. It's like an M.
Yeah.
He's like the Arches.
Yeah, like he... I just thought he was so well done in the depth there and the origin and him talking about where he came from and how everything started. I thought was really, really well done. I thought he was really, really good.
It was a fun character. And the tattoos, I think those were characters in and amongst themselves.
Especially the one like that he's talking to most of the time.
Right. You know, in Pinocchio, you have Jiminy Cricket, who is the conscience of the movie. In Moana, you have Maui's tattoos, which when he does something selfish or cowardly, his tattoos let him know. That character, I think, was very well done for Disney. I mean, that would be, I think, a Pixar character, a fully rounded, realized character that is not black or white. There's shades of gray to him.
Yeah, there's depth to it, and I feel like this character was written almost more to keep the adults interested. Like, it's something there to get them something to take from it, I guess.
Fair enough.
Because my kids don't care about Maui's arc in this movie.
They don't, no, but at least it's in there. So you can see a character, I mean, certainly Moana, when she asks the ocean to take the heart back and find somebody else, then she has a change of heart. Like, you know, she's overcoming some things too. But to be able to see a character that seemingly is a god should be able to handle this, when he gets his hook back, he can't control his powers, so he's got to kind of master those, and then he's got to summon up some courage at the end. Like, he's got some things to overcome as well. And I like that because, again, it seemed different for Disney, whereas I felt like Moana's arc was very similar to what we see in most of the other Disney princess things, just in a Polynesian shell.
I compare it a lot to Brave. That's probably my favorite Pixar one, because I feel like Moana and Merida are both very, very similar. I mean, they're the same, against father's wishes. So yeah, I mean, I get your point. I'm trying
lead
to
their people.
Yeah, like I get your point. They are different, but this new crop, this new era of Disney princess are more heroine than princess.
Right. They're not damsel in distress. They kind of fix their own problems. But I just feel like it's becoming the same chorus that we hear over and over. These arcs are so similar. And I want to not give Disney credit for that. Like, they can't come up with an original arc for their heroine. But
it's worked since the 20s.
I know it has. But if you look at even what they did earlier that year with Zootopia, that movie really takes on something. It's not just about a girl finding her place and family, her culture, the world at large. You know, that was about racism. And it was well done. It wasn't preachy, but they took on something that Disney doesn't generally take on.
I feel like these crops of movies now, the stuff with Maui's Ark or the Zootopia taking on racism and xenophobia, I feel like that makes them more timeless, because My kids love these movies now. But when they rewatch them with their kids when they're like 40 and I'm long gone, there's going to be that grown-up stuff in there that they probably missed this time and they get to rediscover then. Because you know what? If we watch Disney stuff from when we were younger now, some of it's boring. Some of it's not good. And I think it's just surviving on that nostalgia. Where these are good movies that I feel like 20, 30 years from now, when a whole new crop of kids are having kids and they're going to go back and they're going to watch Moana. And I feel like that impact is going to be way more different for the parents and adults than it is when, you know, I show my kids The Black Cauldron, which I love that movie.
You're right. I think when we were kids, certainly there was long before us, there was the Snow White, the Cinderella, all that stuff, which is, you know, just fairy tales. They're animated fairy tales and that's fine. But then when we were kids and they started doing like Beauty and the Beast, which again was a fairy tale, The Lion King, even Aladdin, I think they started to go in a different direction. And I legitimately do think those movies were good. Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture. So I'm not the only one that thinks that that was good. But these new ones that you mentioned, like Zootopia or Moana, fill in the blank, I think a lot of that comes as a direct result of the Pixar influence, which, yes, the two companies are separate. They collaborate on stuff. This was not a Disney Pixar movie, but I think it has Pixar fingerprints on it. I think by and large, Disney is pretty content to crank out another princess that they can have as a photo op for one of their theme parks. They don't necessarily mind new stories the way Pixar does. You mentioned Brave.
I think that's the most Disney Pixar movie.
Yes, that's their obligatory princess story. But if you look at the rest of the movies they're about processing your emotions inside out. They're about dealing with loss, which is what Up was. And then you have WALL-E. Like, movies are so, I think, different that whenever Disney does branch out with something like Zootopia, then I think they're going a more Pixar route. And I think that's great. There are so many lessons that these movies have the ability to teach kids. Because how many times have, and I'm not trying to pick on Frozen, but how many times have your kids watched Frozen?
A lot. Not as much the last couple of years.
Fair enough.
But a ton, yeah.
It's wearing on them, yeah. But you have that kind of captive audience for years and years and years. Now imagine if you do something with it. And again, I'm not saying that these don't, but they have the potential to. Kids watching Inside Out a ton, I think that's great. Kids watching Up, it gives you a different appreciation for an older generation that if you're a kid, you know, outside your grandparents, you may not know old people. But I think that's a real opportunity that you have to get in front of kids. And these people, and I do mean Disney Studios and Pixar, they're clever enough that they can come up with good ways to teach kids stuff so that they learn, but they're tricked into it.
I think the fine line is, whereas like Zootopia falls if it's too preachy, and yes. I think it walks that line pretty damn well.
But I don't think it ever goes over.
I don't think it crosses over. Whereas Pixar's problem may be like, do they get too high concept? Like, is Inside Out too high concept? Like, I think it walks the line while still giving you enough. Like, Richard Kind's character, I think, brings that back down to where. But I don't look at them as competitors. But I just look at them as, like, here's two that are doing the same things, and they're making each other better. And that's what the ultimate competition is like, you keep each other on your toes. And you're not afraid to help each other out when it comes time, because you know what? If you assist Disney and they put out a $500 million movie, that makes you more motivated to do a $600 movie on your own. And then you do that $600 million, and then Disney wants to do the $700 one. So it's like, it keeps both of them fresh, and it keeps them challenging themselves, but also challenging like the norms and what we expect from these movies.
That's kind of what the genesis of my point is, or the seed of my point is I do want them to continue to push each other, because I think it'd be easy to just be lazy and just take...
Put out Nutty by Nature 5 times a year.
Yeah, I mean, dip into sequels or... Okay, maybe, you know, Moana's not a sequel to Pocahontas, but the arc of that character seems very familiar. You can continually crank out Disney princess movies to merchandise a bunch of crap, but you know, they're not going to sell a ton of Inside Out toys.
They did, though. But like, there was enough there to market.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not selling, like, Inside Out branded makeup kits. You know what I mean? You can see that there's money for both of these studios. They come out with a movie and it's good. People are going to see from a conceptual standpoint to be able to push and not only make a movie that kids enjoy, but make a movie that has something in it. And I do think that Moana does.
And I feel like it makes it harder on the landscape of everything, because my kids know that going to the movies is like a big deal now, because we treat them as events.
Right.
And, you know, the Disney movies, the Pixar movies, like, they're excited for Coco. They understand event movies now. And that's because Disney and Pixar are so good. They give us event, like, family
movies. They don't
movies
let you down more often than
down.
Not.
Whereas, like, it used to be just like, oh, we're just going to release a kids movie Christmas because it's going to open with a ton. Doesn't matter what it is. And you got a lot of crap. And I feel like now the crap is kind of just like, shoved out. And so my kids see Emoji Movie. My kids will even say, like, oh, we'll watch that when it comes on TV. They understand event movies.
It's not worth going to see in a theater.
Yeah, and they get this. And that's what I feel like Disney and Pixar have taught me, is they're teaching my kids the theater experience, to where you don't have to see every pile of crap in the theater. Like, going to the movies is awesome, but it's even better if you're selective.
If it's a good movie, yeah.
They know, like, stuff like Trolls or even Secret Life of Pets. Like, that stuff we'll watch eventually, but, like, they see Coco and it's like, oh, we're going to see that in the theater, right? Yeah, yeah, we probably will.
Coco specifically, that's the reason for doing this episode. But obviously, when we're recording this, it comes out this weekend, so we have not seen it, obviously. But to me, Coco seems like, as much as I have been deriding Disney for just making another princess movie, Coco doesn't seem like it's doing that. And I don't mean just because the main character is a boy. It seems like it is dealing with family members, like the afterlife, what happens. And these are questions that, you know, when you're 7, you don't know. It'd be great to have a way to have these things explained to you. And I think that's why children's books can be so great. This, to me, seems like Pixar, and I applaud them for trying to do that, even if they're sampling from a more recent movie.
And that's my issue with Coco, is, like, my kids loved The Book of Life when it came out just a few years ago. Like, the animation's a little different. Like, that was more like a Selick movie. It looked more stop motion, but it's same color palette, same, like, here's somebody going through the afterlife, driven by music, so it just feels like Book of Life without C-tates.
Sure. I don't think it's a coincidence that Disney got a culture box on their movies and they're checked off Polynesian. Now we're going to, I guess, Mexican or Spanish culture and checking that one. So Disney, I guess it's a global brand, so they're going to try and have appeal. They're releasing, I think they're doing another dub of Moana. They're doing it in Hawaiian this time. I think they just announced that or just started working on it a couple months ago, but they've dubbed it. I think there's even a video of Jermaine singing his song in his native tongue.
Tropical is what I meant. When I said he's of Puerto Rican descent, I meant like Polynesian. It's all tropical, like Hawaiian, Polynesia, Puerto Rico. Like, they all have this tropical feel. So I didn't mean like they were trying to keep the music like strictly Polynesian, but like they tried to keep that tropical feel. That's the word that was skipping my mind.
Okay. I guess we'll go with you there. But let us know if you take your kids to see Coco. I mean, it's going to be a while probably before I get to see it, because I don't know how Sarah feels about it. I don't know if she really cares.
And it's honestly,
we don't have kids.
It's so. Honestly one I'm not. This is where I'm conflicted. Not super excited about it, mostly because of the Book of Life thing. And, like, I wasn't nuts about Book of Life, so maybe that's why. But I wasn't super excited for Moana, and I loved it. I wasn't, like, super excited for Brave when it came out, and I loved it. So, like, the ones I'm least excited about, I end up loving the more.
Managed expectations.
Yeah. So, I mean, as long as Coco has songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda, I think we'll be all right.
The tropical stylings of Lin-Manuel Miranda. If you do go see Coco, let us know, because we do check the Twitter and the Facebooks. And certainly if we get a bunch of responses that this movie's good. You know,
or a response that it's good.
We'll go see it. Yeah, I mean, really, whoever's first in, positive feelings, negative feelings, we'll just go ahead and adopt that blindly, because, you know, we're not really interested in doing any work to check into things for ourselves. Next week, we're going to check in on a list that Dave's been looking forward to for about a month. We're going to run down our favorite James Franco movies. The Disaster Artist, finally going to come out. Been hearing about that movie all year. Got a lot of buzz, a lot of hype.
It does not sound like it's going to disappoint.
Yeah, this is maybe the one I feel the most solid about at the end of this year.
Actor, director, screenplay, like noms, best picture, noms at the very least.
Yeah, noms at the very least, and I think it's going to be good. There are a couple other movies that I could see kind of going either way I may or may not like. This one, you just mentioned having lowered expectations or managed expectations for some of these
not
animated ones. Nope. This one, I think my expectations are about as high as they can be. But to get ready for The Disaster Artist, we'll run down our five favorite James Franco movies.
And we'll keep it to five and not mention most of his filmography.
Dave is going to try very hard not to mention most of his filmography. To find out which five those are, come on back with us next week. But until then,
keep it up.